business that's transferable doesn't have the owner doing everything in the business.
Most contractors don't realize that the best time to sell is before they feel ready to sell.
A business that took 20 years to build was wiped out in a year.
And that misunderstanding costs owners millions.
If you have a business that makes money today, sell it today.
Less than 10% of roofing companies are actually sellable.
All the value that you built in your business can be destroyed in seconds.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
Most contractors don't realize that the best time to sell is before they feel ready to sell. And that misunderstanding costs owners millions. My guest today is Claudio Vilas, founder of the Roofing Biz Broker and one of the few MMA advisors who works exclusively in the home services space. Claudio sees behind the curtain every single day. And according to him, less than 10% of roofing companies are actually sellable, despite all the emails owners get claiming buyers are ready. In this episode, we break down why most acquisition outreach is meaningless, the two reasons buyers walk away immediately, why making good money does not mean you have a sellable business, how bad financials and owner dependency quietly destroy valuation, why many owners regret selling even after a big headline number, and the heartbreaking story of an owner who said no to selling and lost everything a year later. We also go deep into Accrual versus cash accounting and why buyers care, what real profitability actually looks like in the home services space, how private equity roll-ups and the second bite of the apple really work, and why technology and marketing only matter when they're tied to the fundamentals. This isn't an episode about selling out. It's about building a real asset instead of a job, protecting your future, and understanding risk most contractors never see it coming. If you're doing 2 to 10 million or more, or planning to get there, this is one of the most important conversations you'll hear this year. Let's get into it. What's up, everyone? This is Mauricio Cardinal. I'm the host today. Thank you for joining, Claudio. I'm super excited to have Claudio on. Claudio Vilas, the Roofing Biz Broker. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. How are you, Mauricio? How was your weekend? Good?
Doing good. Thank God. Can't complain. It was a really good weekend. Beautiful weather in Miami, so can't complain.
I love living in this area of the world, right?
Yes, sir. It's a beautiful time of the year, especially in January.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get into it. So you said that despite all the emails, right, from people asking for, hey, I want to buy your company, your home service companies, very few roofing companies and home service companies are ready to sell. Why is that?
Well, that's a great introduction, because it's basically what I'm trying to let people know, that, you know, just because you get an email from somebody that says they're a private equity, that doesn't mean that you're going to sell it to them, that there actually are a private equity. And there's many people who impose, you know, that they pretend to be private equities or serious investors. So just because you get an email, which everybody gets tons of them all the time, doesn't really mean that you, number one, will sell the business to them. Number two, you will sell it for a fair amount. Or number three, that you're actually ready to sell. Most businesses that come to me, and I would say over 80% of them, are not ready to sell when they come to me. So I'm on a mission in 2026 to really spread the word that if you want to sell your business and you want to get a fair value for it, you have to be ready. And just like everything else, you know, just because you have a good business doesn't mean that you have a sellable business. It could be great for you. You could be making a lot of money, but that doesn't mean that it's sellable. A business that's sellable has to be transferable. A business that's transferable doesn't have the owner doing everything in the business. If you do that, you don't have a business, you have a job. And it's okay. You can make a lot of money that way. But that's the case, right? So don't be blindsided by the fact that you get emails, people telling you that you want to buy your, they want to buy your business. Make sure that you do the whole process on selling your business, and that's how you're going to get a lot more value out of it.
Got it. What's the biggest illusion that contractors believe when they start getting acquisition outreach?
Exactly that. They think that just because you get an email, there's demand for your business. And most people that send you that email don't even know who you are. It's either automated emails or junior associates looking for a deal, or a lot of other brokers as well, that they reach out telling you that they represent a large private equity. To be honest, all the large private equities pay anybody a finder's fee. That doesn't mean that they're representing them. They mean that they're just fishing. And just because you get that email, if you step in front of a real professional buyer and you're not prepared, you're not going to get much further than the first conversation, if you ever get there.
Yeah. And what percentage do you think that of all the companies out there are really truly sellable today? Like what percentage out of 100, like how many companies are actually?
Probably less than 10%.
And what makes, let's get into this. So what makes a company sellable?
Oh, perfect. Great question. So the number one thing that businesses that don't sell have is lack of financials. The financials are really badly taken care of. You can't really demonstrate your revenues or your earnings, and that's the number one reason why businesses don't get sold. Very close to that number one reason is the second one, that the owner does everything. The more the owner is in the business, the less the business is sellable. So those are the two main reasons. If you really want to build a business that you can sell, you have to have processes, standard operating procedures. You have repeatable processes. Again, you need to be able to predict what's going to happen. So most businesses don't have business plans or marketing plans, and that it really hurts your valuation. The other thing is many businesses are just not profitable. If you look at the business the right way, you're not being profitable. For example, you have a business that makes, I don't know, $200,000 a year in paper, but the owner is not getting a salary and the owner is working 24/7 on the business. Now, if you were going to pay a salary to somebody to do that, well, the business is not really making $200,000, it's probably making $50,000. And nobody's going to pay a lot of money for a business that makes $50,000. So number one, the financials, and number two, the transferability of the business, meaning the owner is not working there. There's standard operating procedures. There's predictability. There's business plans, marketing plans, and so forth.
You mentioned, because the last time we talked about was how rare is that a lot of companies have accurate financial data. What do you think that is? Like, how do you get, like, is it as simple as hiring a, you know, accountant, bookkeeper, just to track everything? Like, why is most business owners don't have that? What do you think that's the reason?
The reason for that is most business owners don't pay attention to the accounting. They just want to make sure that they pay as little taxes as possible, but they're not using that information, which is very valuable information, for decision making. So when you're going to sell a business, the buyers, if it's a professional buyer, they're going to want to have information for the decision making information. Okay, and just keeping your P&L on cash and not accrual doesn't help you make decisions. It helps you, you know, lower your taxes. So 90% of business owners are only focused on that, not on the decision making process that you could have if you have the right financials. Now, having the right financials is not cheap. It's more expensive than just hiring a bookkeeper and keeping your books, right? You need more involvement in the record keeping. There's two types of ways of keeping your financials. One is accrual and the other one is cash. Cash is very simple. You know, I pay something, I book it as, a cost, and that's it. Or I get paid, I book it as revenue, and that's it. Accrual accounting, which is the right accounting to actually do, is a lot more complicated because you're not recognizing revenue and you're not recognizing your earnings until you actually earn them. So for example, let's suppose in January or in December, you're paying 2026 insurance, okay? And you put, I don't know, $100,000. Let's do really round numbers, $12,000 in insurance. Under cash accounting, all that money is allocated on the December when you actually paid for the whole insurance, okay? So December has $12,000, $120,000 in the books, right? So that's your cost. Under accrual accounting, you did pay the $120,000, but you will be deducting $10,000 every month as you go through 2026. So your P&L is going to look a lot smoother in accrual than in cash, and it's going to be a lot more accurate, okay? Same thing happens when you book sales, but I'm not going to dig too much into that. But the truth is that accrual accounting tells you the real story of the business. Doing accrual accounting takes a lot more effort and a lot more involvement than just hiring a bookkeeper for a couple of $100 a month and doing the cash accounting. Okay, so that's a reason. Most business owners are focused on doing business and selling, and that's okay. But when you want to sell your business, you got to be a lot more detailed in how you keep the records of your business.
And obviously, there's a kind of competitive or industry standards for each industry, right? Let's take roofing, right? What is the industry standard for cost of service, COGS, right? Or for cost of doing service and doing businesses, paying all the commission, all that. What do you see is the most common, like, the profitability? I guess it just kind of depends on what is that common way. I guess it depends on the level of business, the size of the business, and all that. So can you walk us through that? What you look for in that situations?
Yeah, if you look at a P&L, you have 1, 2, 3, 4 basic lines that you have to look at. The first one, of course, is revenues, how much money, you know, is coming into the business. The second one is the cost of goods sold, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. The third one is the GP, the gross profit, and the final is the expenses, okay? And after all that, you get your net income, okay? So if we start from the top to the bottom, the cost of goods sold is a very important line, which many times I see is misrepresented. Cost of goods sold should be anything that is variable or varies according to the jobs that you do. For example, if you're paying your crews should be in cost of goods sold. If you have marketing that's specifically focused on the generation of jobs, that should be there as well. Because basically what you're looking at is what I would say the variable costs, okay? Anything that varies should go there. So if you do the right accounting, your gross profit, which is basically your revenues minus your cost of goods sold, should have a percentage that's directly related to sales, okay? So it should be a percentage, like, typically, you're looking at 30 to 40%, okay? So that's the number one thing. That's the first thing that you want to take care of, that any expense that is related to jobs goes into the cost of goods sold. Material handling and all that goes in there. Many people put their crews into the cost of goods sold, and that's okay. But I've seen it happen that when you move from crews to internal employees, they move from cost of goods sold to expenses. So it goes to the employees. That's not correct. Even if it's your own employee, but the employees are the crews that are doing the job, that should stay in cost of goods sold. Again, it should be a percentage that's fairly consistent, okay? 30 to 40%. And then you have the expenses. The expenses should be all the fixed costs, all those costs that don't vary, no matter how much you grow in sales or how much you lose sales, the expenses shouldn't vary. So if you grow more sales, the percentage of expenses should tend to go down, okay? If your sales start tanking, the percentage of expenses would go up. If you do the right accounting with this information, you can create a number that's extremely important, which is basically the break-even point, BEP, okay? What is a break-even point? It's the point at which your business is no more profitable. Because people don't keep this information the right way, it's very hard to understand what the break-even point is, what the BEP is. When you want to sell your business and you can't really define what your breaking point is, a buyer is going to be a lot more reluctant to actually buy the business. Now, what is the net income that is standard in the industry? Well, it's about 10 to 15%. So out of everything, you sell $1 million, you should keep at least $100,000 to $150,000 in the bottom line. If you're not doing that, you're not having a business that's worth sellable. There's businesses that make a lot more than that, 15 to 20%, and some of them that are make even more. Now, when that happens, when you're showing a business that's making more than 20%, buyers are starting to wonder if there's anything hidden there that you're really not showing, because it's very hard to get more than that percentage. It's possible. Yes, you can manage it very well. Yes, you can have your pricing right. Yes. But people will be suspicious if you're above 20, 25%.
And what are those common things that people find hidden sometimes?
One thing, for example, if the owner is not paying himself the salary and he's taking all the money out in distributions. So, but what the owner is doing is actually working in the business. So if you're going to replace the owner with an employee, how much money would you put there? That's what, one of the examples I did at the beginning. The other one is the owner is doing sales, but not charging himself a commission. And typically the owner is the number one salesman, right? So that's a huge thing. So you are selling a couple of $1 million in roofs a year. You, as the owner, somebody comes and buys your business, they're going to have to pay somebody to do it, right? So it looks like you're making more money than you're making.
What are contractors most often wrong when they estimate the value of their business?
The thing that they get the most wrong is go to social media and see what people say they sold the business for and believe that that's true. Social media, unfortunately, is very, extremely misleading. Everybody in social media is a millionaire. Everybody in social media is an influencer. Everybody knows what they're doing. And the truth is, when you start digging into it, most people don't. So the number one thing is not to listen to the experts. And the experts are M&A people, me or other M&A brokers that are out there. You know, talk to them, because we have information on other actual sales. We have several databases and we know how much business are actually being sold for. So we're not going to tell you, that your business is extremely valuable when it's not. And our job is to sell your business. If we tell you, something that's unrealistic, we're never going to make our commissions. So talk to the people that know, and don't talk to the people that, yap in Facebook or Instagram and so forth.
Yeah. You hear it all the time. I mean, especially in this space. Why do owners regret selling the company, even when the deal looks good on paper?
The number one reason why people regret selling the company is because they don't read the fine print when they sell the company. To have a really good deal is not only about the sticker price, if you will. Oh, I'm going to pay you $10 million for your business. Great. How are you going to pay me that $10 million? Okay. Which is the terms and conditions and the small fine print in the contract. There's a lot of things that a buyer can do to show you that they're going to buy your business for $10 million, but then eventually pay you five or less. Okay. So there's a lot of clauses in the agreement that can mislead you. And that's the one thing, I thought I was going to get $10 million because I was offered $10 million. Well, I only got five, number one. Number two is not paying attention to who the buyer is. It's very important, the quality of the buyer when they buy a business from you, because he's not going to pay 100% cash and he's going to somehow finance a part of the deal, which could go all the way from, 10% to 50% of the purchase. And then you sell it to somebody that, number one, might not be able to pay the debt, or number two, might not have your same values. Okay. Many business owners regret selling to people just because they looked at how much money they were getting paid, but they didn't think of, what's going to happen with your employees? What's going to happen with the legacy that you build? What's going to happen to the name of your company, which in many cases is your own name, right? So regrets, there's many regrets. Number one, like I said, not getting paid what you thought you were going to pay. Number two, not getting the legacy that you were expecting to get. Number three, getting stuck with a buyer, because you do need to stay at least 12 to 24 months with a buyer until you actually exit 2 years later. And then it becomes a nightmare because you don't agree with the buyer in many things, right? The vision, the mission, the legacy of the business. So people sometimes just jump into a deal without really thinking all this through. Many other people, they don't plan on what they're going to do after the sell. So, okay, now I've been doing this for 10 years, 20 years. I built this business. My whole life is in the business. And now I sold it. Now what? You know, well, what is my purpose now in life? What do I do? And if you don't plan for that, you could have a lot of regret because now you want to go back to it. And typically you're going to have a non-compete. So, you know, you're not going to be able to go back directly. The other thing is misinvesting the money that you get from the business. Even if you get all the money from the business, you know, many people are used to getting a whatever, you know, a couple hundred thousand, whatever you get for the business. And now all of a sudden your bank account has several millions in it and you start splurging, right? And not really reinvesting it. You need to make sure that you have that. So in order to actually have a good exit, you have to plan it very carefully so you don't regret it. And I'll tell you, Mauricio, first of all, most businesses don't sell. And from the ones who sell, most owners actually regret having sold it. So, and all of that has to do with lack of planning. 100% of that is lack of planning. If you plan it, you will be able to exit for the right amount and not regret it.
Do you think it's wise to come up with a list of questions to ask the buyer before the, I mean, I'm assuming a lot of owners do this, but I guess you're saying that they don't like basically like a list of 150 questions or whatever, 25 questions, basically outlining exactly what you just said. Here's what's going to happen. Here's what I look at here, what the worst case scenario. Here's what's going to happen to my employees, and just going through those questions before the transaction. Is that you don't see that after? I guess you don't see that.
No, unfortunately, they don't do that, and that's a huge problem. The buyers do have all their questions, okay? The buyers do the due diligence. And I can tell you due diligence is a really, really tough process, okay? They ask a million questions. And unfortunately, the sellers typically don't ask any questions or very few, very superficial. The sellers should have a list of questions to the buyer that is equal to or larger than the questions that the buyers have from the sellers. Again, it's all about not doing it yourself, working with people that actually can help you. And you should have questions to ask to a broker, if you're going to work with a broker, the attorneys, the accountants, the wealth managers, the tax advisors that you need to actually sell the business. So you have to create a team to sell your business, okay? And for each one of the members of the team, you should have qualifying questions and a list of, just like you would be interviewing for a sales rep or for an employee in your company, you should have an interviewing list of questions for each one of the members of your team. I do have that. I actually put them together and I'm putting them in my website for the future. So questions that you should ask to your accountant, your attorney, your buyer, and so forth. And make sure that you ask them, even if it feels uncomfortable, because your future is on the line, okay? If you're going to have a buyer that's going to destroy your business a month or a year from now, you know, you're not going to like that. So how do you prevent that? Well, asking the right questions, paying attention to the answers, being critical about it, okay? And not taking this lightly. If you built a business over the last 20 years, a bad decision when you sell it can destroy everything that you built in those 20 years. So it's not something that you should take lightly. It's something that you should really pay attention to.
Yeah. So that was actually my next question about resources. So you have put together resources, or you're right now you are putting out resources to where somebody that wants to sell their business, here are the questions that they can ask before they sell. Is that what you're doing, or you already have that in place?
Yes. If you want to sell your business, especially if you want to sell to private equity, everybody in the roofing industry talks about private equity. Most people don't even know what that means. And the truth is that private equity is basically a group of people with a lot of money that is typically not theirs. It's from investors that they invest in businesses, they make them grow, and they make them more profitable, and then they resell it. Okay, so it's a form of organization. It's private equity. There's other forms of organizations that have also professional buyers, like, for example, family offices or independent sponsors or strategic buyers. So all of them, you know, other companies, other roofing companies or other companies in the trade that want to invest into the roofing industry, that those would be what it's called the strategic buyer. And the reason why you call them strategic and not financial like the other ones is because they're buying your business for strategic reasons, for X, Y, or Z reasons, specific reasons. But I'm not going to get into that. But what I'm going to say is all of those buyers, whether it's private equity or anyone that I'm actually mentioning, have teams of people that work with them to make the best deal for them, not necessarily for you, right? So what is a team? Well, a team will have accountants that know acquisitions, okay? It's not the same accountant as you use for your day-to-day. It's an acquisitions accountant, okay? Then they're going to have lawyers. Again, not the same lawyer that you would use for your divorce or whatever you use, you know, lawyers. This is M&A lawyers. They're going to have tax advisors, and they're also going to have wealth advisors. You should have a mirroring team on your side. If you don't, you will be outnumbered, and you will be, you know, you will not get the best deal. Not because they're mean or anything. Everybody is looking out for their own sake, right? So if you don't defend yourself by having a good team, you can, you know, lose a lot of money, leave a lot of money on the table. Now, the important thing is the good buyers, the professional buyers, also appreciate it when they have a seller that's prepared and that has a team and that's not doing it on his own. If you're doing it on your own, probably you're not going to be selling to the best buyers. You're going to sell to buyers who are looking for people who are not necessarily prepared for this, okay? So it's very important to have that. And it's also very important, like I said, to have a process to determine who your team is going to be.
Yeah. One thing that to keep in mind is that these guys are deal makers, right? And they've been doing this for a long time, and that's what they do, is make deals. So they're a lot more prepared. And also at the same time, this is maybe their 50th or 100th deal. So they've done this before. So it's really just unfair. It's not really unfair. I would say it's just unfair match in terms of like knowledge and experience.
Yes.
And you just have to be prepared, because like this is your first sale, and potentially it could be a lifetime. It could change your life forever, right? So for the good or for the bad. So you have to prepare. These guys they're deal makers. So they have a team in place, and a lot of times they're not looking out for your best interest. So you have to be ready.
Like everything else, everybody is looking for their own best interest. Okay. Like I said, it's not that they're mean, but if I say, you know, Mauricio, I don't know, your business is worth, let's say, $10 million. I'm just giving any number. Your business is worth $10 million. And I come and I offer you five and you say yes. Am I going to go and say, hey, you know what? No, hey, you should be asking me for 10. No, you accepted it. That's it, right? Same thing if I tell you, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you what's called the second bite at the apple. And we can talk about that in a minute. And you say yes, and you don't look at what kind of shares you're getting or what kind of governance you get on those shares. Or, I mean, if you don't know, they're not going to come and tell you, hey, you should have asked me this, right? And it's not that, again, it's not that they're mean. You would do the same thing, right? If you go and offer somebody half of the value for something and they accept, hey, well, thank you, right? Same thing. But like I said, many, many good, strong, professional, and ethical buyers will want you to have a team on your side, because it is important for them that you actually make good in the deal, okay? Because if you do, it's going to be a lot easier for them in the future, okay? But you don't know who's sitting across the table from you, so you got to be ready for anything.
Yeah. You shared a story about a client who said no to selling a business and when things are going well, and then had to shut down a year later. What happened with that?
That's one of my pet peeves as well. Okay, just like I say, don't do this alone. This is an extremely important decision. You want to have a team with you. Don't also wait when your business is going well. Okay, when your business is going well and you look at the last 3 years and the trend is going up and everybody's happy and you're making, you know, millions of dollars a year, Don't wait. Sell it. Okay. The reason why you should sell it is because you do not know what's going to happen in the future. You don't know if we're going to have another COVID. You don't know if we're going to have another 9/11. You don't know if we're going to have another housing crisis. I mean, just look at history, and every 7 to 10 years, you've got a crisis that nobody expects, okay? So you might be doing great. You're in 2006, 2007, and you say, hey, I don't want to sell this business because it's doing great. 2008 comes around, and you go bankrupt because nobody can pay you what you were doing, right? And all the value that you built in your business can be destroyed in seconds. Not only you have the risk of what's happening outside, you also have the risk of what's happening inside. You could go to the doctor tomorrow and the doctor says, you know what, Mauricio, you have cancer, you got 5 months to live. You don't know if that's going to happen. Or like my son last week got in a car crash, okay? You're not expecting to get into a car crash. Fortunately, nothing happened to him, but he could have been very hurt. Something happens in your personal life. You work with your, you know, you live with your spouse, and your spouse gets a great opportunity across the country, and you have to leave. You never know what's going to happen next year. So the only thing that you do know is where you are today. And if today your business is sellable, my advice to everybody is sell it. And I'll explain a little bit more about that. And then I'm going to go to the story that you just mentioned, because it is a very interesting story, and although it's very sad. So if you know that your business is doing well today, you don't know if it's going to do well tomorrow. Most of your wealth is tied to the earnings of your business, okay? So just to make a big round number, if your business is worth, if your business makes $1 million, it's worth about $5 million. Okay. If you sold it today, that's what you would get, 5 million. Next year, if the business is for some reason loses that and goes to zero, your business is worth zero. So you're not losing the $1 million that you're earning, you're losing the $5 million of the value. Okay. Worse of that, even worse, when businesses don't go well, the owners tend to look for loans, they tend to look for ways out, they tend to put their own money, sell their house to actually keep the business alive. And I've seen it happen all the time. What happens is, if the business doesn't recover, not only you lost the $5 million you could have gotten last year, you're losing much more than that. You could be losing your house, you could be losing everything that you have. And unfortunately, it happens too often. So what happened to my client was exactly that. He was doing very well in the business 3 years, and he started getting offers, and he kept saying, oh, this offer is too low, this offer is too low. I can make more money in 5 years than what they're offering me. And I typically have a 1 year agreement with my sellers, and I couldn't sell the business because he just kept rejecting offers and offers and offers. The contract expired, we didn't sell it. I keep following up with him, and I follow up about 6 months later, about July this year, I followed up with him and say, hey, how are things going? Claudio, I wish I had sold my business last year. Okay, I am terminally ill with the, he's got emphysema and lung cancer. And because I took my foot off the pedal, the business tanked. Can you sell it now? And the business now is not making any money. So the millions of dollars he was going to get last year, this year, he's got nothing. And he's going to have to close it. So he loses money. The business is going to have to close. His daughter and his granddaughter and everybody, nobody's going to receive any inheritance from him. And a business that took 20 years to build was wiped out in a year, right? So if he had sold last year, he would have millions of dollars in the bank. He wouldn't be in charge of the business, so he can get what is called the second bite at the apple. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. And actually generate generational wealth. Now, he's struggling. And there's nothing we can do, because the business, unfortunately, is the valuation of a business has to do with how much money the business makes. If the business doesn't make any money, there's nobody out there that's going to pay you any money for that business. Okay, so it's very sad. I know the guy, friend of mine, well, not friend, but you know, well-known for me. And that actually drove me to write the business, that the book that I wrote that we can talk about later. But basically, I want people to understand that if you have a business that makes money today, sell it today. And let me tell you about the future, okay? So let's suppose he had sold that business last year. He would have put probably 70 to 80% of the money, and it was several million dollars, okay? I'm not talking about a small business. It was several million dollars. He would have put the money away, so whatever happened to his health afterwards, it wouldn't be a problem. But he would reinvest a percentage of that into the business, which is typically between 10 and 30%, okay? You reinvest money in the business. So now he's got money in the bank and money invested in the business. Let's suppose the business tanked, okay? The same thing happened. The buyers couldn't make it work. It tanks. He would have kept 70% of the money. Now, let's suppose the business grows. Because he reinvested money in the business, that 30% that he reinvested, typically when you sell to private equity, 5 years from now could be two or three times what you originally reinvested. So he could have had 5 years from now, or his family would have had probably another payday as big as the original one. So the best way to actually hedge against future uncertainty when your business is good is actually to sell it. Is that clear?
Yeah, 100%. Makes sense to me. You're not putting all your eggs in one basket. That's basically what's happening. Let's talk about what you just mentioned, which is a very common strategy. If you're selling to private equity, they typically, you know, do roll-ups and take another bite at the apple, right? So let's walk through that scenario. So let's say, and the pros and cons, because I understand both scenarios. A lot of people, because if you're an owner, sometimes you just want to sell and not be involved, and you get a clean sheet and they can do something else. So it's like your mind is off the actual transaction and you can focus on other things. I don't see actually something wrong with that. But sometimes there's other opportunities where you can actually sell, you stay on for a couple of years, and then you can actually take another bite at the apple. Let's talk about that. How does that work?
Okay, great, Mauricio. First of all, I want to say that I am a very individualist person. There's not one size fits all answer. I'll give you the probabilities of you making more money by doing, you know, by selling the business, but that doesn't mean it's a fit for you. Some people want to keep the business, and if that's good for you, great. Okay. Some people want to sell it and stay working in the business. If that's good for you, great. Some people want to sell it and leave and, you know, ride off into the sunset. If it makes sense to you, that's great. Now, what my job is to provide you with all the different alternatives and what the pros and cons of each one. Okay, I'm not selling any one of the alternatives. But a great alternative is not to sell when you're completely tired and you want to just leave the business, because you can make a lot more money if you sell a couple of years before you're ready to sell. Okay, so the best alternative, or the best probability of making the most out of selling your business, has to do with the second bite at the apple and with the staying in the business for a couple of years. Most buyers are going to want you to be in the business for at least a couple of years. So if you want to sell and just go away right off into the sunset the day after you sign the deal, well, the amount of buyers that are going to be interested in your business is going to be a lot less, okay? Especially if you are the business, like we said before, if you're actually the business and doing everything in the business and you want to sell it and leave, I can guarantee you it's going to be very hard to sell that business, okay? From a probability of making the most out of it, I would say you need to start thinking about selling the business. Start acting about selling the business 3 to 5 years before you actually sell it. The private equities or the buyers are going to ask you for the last 3 years financials and the last 3 years history of the business. Okay, so that means that if you want to sell, you know, 3 years from now in 2029, your finances should be clean starting in 2026. So now you have 3 years. And they're also going to ask you to stay 2 more years, okay, working there. That is the best scenario. And if you as a seller give them that, that's where you're going to get the most value. If you don't, you're not going to get that much value. You can still sell it. Like I said, it's not that you can't sell it. You're going to get less value. But if you really want to plan it, that's the best way. 5 years before, 3 years before you actually sell it, 5 years before you actually leave. Now, many business owners, because of our personality, and I consider myself a business owner because I do have other businesses and I do this as my own business. You know, we like our business and we like to stay in business, and we don't like people telling us what to do, right? We hate to be told. That's why we're business owners. So when you sell to private equity, one of the big issues is that many sellers don't like to have a boss. And when you sell, you will have a boss, okay? Some bosses are going to be more hands-on. Some of them are going to be more, open to you making your own decisions, but you will be part of a larger organization, and some people don't like it. So if you can bear that for the next 2 years after you sold the business, you can make a lot more money on the second bite at the apple than in the first one. Okay, so, but it's up to you. I mean, there's, like I said, pros and cons for each one of them. And it has to do with you and your personality. If you know that you can't take a boss telling you what to do, well, then you should prepare the business so it runs on its own and you're able to leave earlier. But you're never going to leave less than 6 months after. I mean, that's almost unheard of, that you sell it and you go, because you need the transition. The buyer doesn't know your business. He doesn't know your people. He doesn't know your clients. He doesn't know your processes, and he needs to learn, and you have to give him the chance to learn.
Yeah. It's second bite of the apple. So that's basically what that means is, like, correct me if wrong, is that somebody, private equity, gets together a group of people and they resell the business to another buyer for a higher multiple. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yes. So basically, you just defined it pretty well. You reinvest part of the money that you got for the business into the new business, okay? Because now it's a new business. Now, many things that people get wrong in this, or they don't ask the right questions and they should be asking them. Number one is, what exactly am I reinvesting in? Am I investing in my own company as a standalone company? Am I investing in the whole corporation that's buying me? And it's completely different views, right? So if you are investing in your own company, that 30%, 20% still has quite a lot of risk. Now, if you're investing in the whole conglomerate that bought you, you're reinvesting 30% of what you got, but it's going to be a much smaller percentage of the total corporation. Now, one of the reasons why people do roll-ups is to minimize risks, okay? So they're buying your company in Florida, for example, because they have other companies in, I don't know, Texas, Oklahoma, and New York, whatever. So what you do that is you minimize the risk of weather-related events. In Florida, we haven't had a strong storm for a while. So if you are a standalone company, you have a much bigger, higher probability to go bankrupt because you're waiting on that storm. Now, if you have a company that has a company in Florida and another one in Texas, and Texas has been doing great with hailstorms or whatever, well, that is a hedge, right? That company's doing great. You're not doing that great. This company will finance the shortfalls of this company. That's hedging, and that's why businesses do roll-ups. When you reinvest into the second bite at the apple, and you're investing in the whole corporation, you're investing in a company that's much less risky. Okay? That's very important because, again, you, when you're on your own, the risk is 100% on you. Now you reinvested in a company that has more or other companies, and that makes it less risky. Less risk means higher valuation. Okay. And that's why you get bought. You get bought because, and they will pay you X multiplier on your EBITDA because you're risky. But when they're buying you, they're de-risking you and they're building a much less risky organization. Now, that means that your 30% that you're reinvesting, in a group that's actually going to be more valuable in the future. And what is value basically is the multiplier on the EBITDA, okay? So this company that bought you will do two things: increase sales and lower costs, okay? Minimize risk. That is going to affect the multiplier that they have on their own valuation, and therefore the multiplier that you have on that 30% that you reinvested in, okay? So 5 years from now, if everything goes as planned by the private equity that's buying you, you're not only growing sales, you're also lowering costs and lowering risk. By doing that, the multiplier will increase. So let's suppose you sold a business that makes $1 million. You get $5 million on the business. You reinvest $1 million back in the business. That reinvestment of $1 million is going to be sold for a company that has higher EBITDA and higher multiplier. That is a compounding effect, okay? So that $1 million that you reinvested could very well be worth $10 million 5 years from now. So you sold the company, you get $4 million in your pocket, you wait 5 years, you get another $10 million. That's the value of the second bite at the apple. Not only that, but if the company doesn't distribute earnings and they only keep money to make the business grow, well, then your growth from 1 million to 10 million is actually tax-free because you're not getting to pay any taxes because it's the valuation of the company that's selling. Now, when you sell it, you're going to have to pay taxes. That's a different story. But you're not paying every year because you're not getting distributions. So it's growing, well, I would say tax-deferred, I guess. I'm not a tax expert, and this is not tax advice or anything. And that's why you need a tax expert in your team. Okay, that's what I said at the beginning. So that's the value of actually selling your company. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me why anybody who already has a company that's sellable doesn't sell it, because there's so much upside to it and so little downside to it. And as long as you do your due diligence with your buyers, like we said before, that I don't know why people would just sell the companies, right? Especially if you've had it for 10, 20 years.
Yeah. Let's talk about what is the role of technology, AI, and making a company sellable? What have you seen in terms of these transactions we've taken part of? How important is technology?
Great question. Like everything else, technology is a tool. Great tools, excellent tools, but many people don't know how to use that tool. So it's not only about the technology you have, it's how well integrated to your operations it is and to your strategy, okay? One of the things that I always find is that people have AccuLynx or JobNimbus or ProLine or any other CRMs, and they're not actually using it to the full extent of what you could use them for. These are great tools, but people just use a percentage. Like we use only 10% of our brain. Well, they're using 10% of what they could use. And the more you use technology, the more valuable you are, okay? One of the things that buyers always ask is, how much do you make per job, which is fairly easy to know that, but then is what is the cost per job? And now you're getting into, you know, a little bit more detail, and you need your CRM to be linked to your financial software so you can actually answer that question, okay? The buyers will look into your AccuLynx or your JobNimbus, like I said, or your ProLine or whatever CRM you're using to determine how good you're managing, how well you're managing that company. So you need to use it, right? And of course, now we have AI and we have other, drones that fly over and give you accurate information. Tools are great if you know how to use them, right? If you don't know how to use them, it's just another cost. And many people, I've seen companies having so many tools and they don't even know what they're doing with it, but you know what? It's affecting their costs, right? So the difference between something that's a cost and that's an investment is how much revenue it generates, right? So something could be, you could be just wasting your money in a lot of tools or using a couple of tools really well and generating money out of that.
Have you seen buyers actually pay a company more if they have everything in place in terms of technology? Like everything's easy to read.
Yeah.
They'll put it on. Okay.
Yes. Absolutely, yes. And that's why, you know, I'm again, my focus this year, Mauricio, is to get companies to become investment grade companies. Not just a company that's a good, you know, business, but actually companies that people would want to buy them. And if you remember at the beginning of this conversation, or maybe around the middle, we talked about strategic buyers, okay? Strategic buyers will pay more money for your company if your company has specific things that they're looking for, okay? And that's very important because, again, that multiple that we're talking about varies depending on a lot of things, including how well organized your company is and how much technology it has, how well it uses it, how well it uses the resources, and who the buyer is. The buyer actually will affect the valuation of your company. That's why to my clients, I never give them a valuation that's an exact number. I give them a range of numbers because it really depends. We don't know until we go to market who the buyer is going to be. We have an idea of who we want it to be, but we don't know who it will be. And there's buyers out there that value technology very, very much. But again, you know, it's not about the technology, it's the use of that technology.
Yeah, yeah. Integrating with smart marketing, right? Like that's what actually drove, you know, first met is that you mentioned that there's a lot of frustration with you that a lot of these guys you speak to, a lot of the owners don't have like any smart marketing in place or just they don't know the numbers. Let's talk about that. How important do you see like marketing and technology go hand in hand to increase valuation?
Tremendously. I mean, it's really, really important to do that, to have a marketing plan. Okay. Here's a couple of examples that I can give you. I have a company that we had in the market, and they actually grew very well in 2025, but they did not so good in 2024. And I had it for sale in the middle of 2025. So the question was, okay, you're growing. Why are you growing? And is this sustainable, right? So, and the answer was a deer in the headlights. The owner just didn't know why they grew or if that growth was sustainable. So when you have marketing, you can predict fairly well, number one, why did you grow? What were the levers that made your sales, your revenues grow? What were the ones that didn't grow? And you can only do that if you do planning, right? And the same thing for the future. Is it sustainable? Well, if I continue to put, I don't know, to do these marketing strategies, then I will continue to grow my business. That's sustainable. Most owners, unfortunately, are not there. So they grow, but they can't tell you exactly why they grow. So marketing is extremely important because it helps you answer that question. So the better your marketing, the better your marketing plans, the better your marketing partner. You want a marketing partner that will, you know, not just put ads on Facebook, but really help you determine the ROI of the of what you're investing in marketing, that help you make decisions of what you should use, what kind of technology you should use. That's extremely helpful, Mauricio. And again, I wish people paid more attention to this because it all goes down to the bottom line. So that's what I think. You need to, and again, AI is very important. But I mean, I tried to do AI on my own and I can't do it. I need somebody that's an expert, right? Of course, I ask ChatGPT things and I use it for day to day, but I wouldn't replace AI. I wouldn't replace a good marketing strategist and helper with AI because I just don't know. And the same thing should be for any business owner.
Just to kind of put that into perspective, the important thing to remember is if you're evaluating marketing is to understand your ROI, right? Exactly what you said. But you need clean data and you have to have access to CRMs, right? And you have to understand the most important number for any type of marketing is your cost per acquisition. And then you have to determine like how if the range with that cost per acquisition and see if it's profitable, right? If you're making money on that. And that's how you determine. It's like the first step. And like I say, 95% of people that we work with don't understand that in the beginning. It's on us to educate them, right? I've started to realize. But that's the reason why there's a lot of frustration with a lot of you know, roofing companies owner and so home service companies with marketing because they don't have those things and they don't understand the numbers necessarily, and that leads to frustration and you know, and empty promises, all that stuff. So that's kind of a big factor on why that doesn't work. And the thing is the growth, right? You said it's growth, right? So if the buyer is going to buy somebody who's growing, that's the main factor. And the main factor in growth is marketing and sales, especially marketing, if you know what you're doing.
Exactly. Like everything else, you need to work with professionals. And the more you work with professionals, the more your business will be valuable. It's just like that. I mean, a business owner, let's talk a little bit about the role of a business owner, okay? Because it leads to what I'm going to tell you after. The role of a business owner is not to be an expert in marketing, is not to be an expert in sales, is not to be an expert in production, is not to be an expert in finances. The role of a business owner is to put those resources together the right way, right? So if you try to do everything as a business owner, you're going to fail eventually. If you spend the same amount of time and the same amount of effort in looking for the right partners who can help you grow the business, then you're building a business that's worth selling. Okay, so, and you typically will start with business partners that will help you, and eventually you will grow into having people in-house that will help you do that. So you would start, I don't know, marketing with a marketing agency, then you're going to have to hire a marketing manager, and as the business keeps growing, that marketing manager will be able to manage marketing, therefore you're not managing marketing anymore. Same thing with a fractional CFO. You start by hiring a fractional CFO. Eventually, you hire a CFO. You start by, working with crews until you find your people. You bring your people in-house. And you build your business in such a way that the business runs itself and you're not part of the business. Once you've achieved that, you can have a huge exit from that business because you've created value. But your job as a business owner is not to be the expert on any of this. It's to actually understand it enough so you can have the right people in your team and surround yourself with people that will add value to the team.
Awesome. Let's talk about your book. Why did you write the book, or you're still in the process of writing?
Well, I wrote it. I haven't published it yet. I actually have to do that because I've been so busy with year end and so forth. I should have launched it now in January, probably going to launch it in February. The book is inspired by this situation that I had with this client of mine. And I said, I don't like to see a business owner that worked his whole life, losing everything because he made a bad decision in the last big decision of his life. So I decided to write a book. And by the way, I'm a very straight shooter, Mauricio, and I hate to see things on Facebook and all that mislead people. So I wrote a book that's basically about the things that could go wrong when you sell a business and how to avoid them. I don't want to put it into the negative perspective, but I do want to be very realistic. So I called it Multiples, Myths, and Millions. And it's going to come out very soon. But basically, it's a collection of situations and stories and learnings that I've had throughout my years, not only in roofing, because I've been a broker before roofing, where, I try to look at all the myths that are out there that we discuss a few of them here in our conversation today, what multiples really are. And at the end of the day, how can you actually, exit your business for millions? So it's called Multiples, Myths, and Millions for that reason.
If you could give one piece of advice to a contractor doing 3 million and up in revenue, what would that piece of advice be that you mentioned wants to sell?
Well, like I said, number one, first do an in-depth analysis of your whole company. Look at where your gaps are. And if you're going to exit in the next couple of years, start thinking of your company from the buyer's point of view. If you were an investor and this wasn't your company, what would you like to see? And be very brutal and honest about it, and then start working on those gaps. So you fill in the gaps so you're going to have a great valuation in the future. If it's 3 million, you probably want to get to 5 to 6 million before you sell it. You probably don't want to sell it right now. So you got a couple of years to build on that and rely on professionals. Rely on people who know what they're doing, not on Facebook gurus and influencers. Nothing wrong with them, but you know, the real professionals are going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear.
Yeah. Where do people find you, Claudio?
Well, my website, www.theroofingbizbroker.com. My email, claudio.viles@theroofingbizbroker.com. And my cell phone, 954-774-4141. And I'm in social media too. I don't think I'm an influencer, but I am there.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you, Claudio, for your time. I'm going to put the information on the description so people can have it. And they can reach out to you if they're interested in talking. And I recommend, if you guys are interested in learning more, you don't obviously have to sell your business. Just learning the information is very valuable. And my recommendation is just to position your company to sell the business, even if you have no intention of selling it, because that one day might happen.
I agree 100%.
So, Claudio, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Mauricio.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.